Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We basically only really have one rule on the show and on this network, and that is to have fun. If you're having fun, the listeners are having fun, allegedly. Also, needed to remind listeners that your support is the reason why this show exists. In no small form, it's literally that, okay? Advertisers, hit and miss every now and again. Very few products get sold. But what does happen is that people will subscribe for a few dollars a month to get the Vinnie Eastwood Show commercial-free archives. And also, some people are donating about $20 a month to keep the lights on and the heat burning and so on and so forth. Coming into winter now in New Zealand, this house has got really high ceilings. It's fracking cold. I need a new pair of slippers. All right, basically, that's what I need badly. It's a pretty rough existence, yo. New Zealand construction methods have not improved since the early pioneering days that much. Okay, and in fact, it's almost as if. They've employed Scotsmen to construct all the houses in order to insulate the cold so as to remind them of home. It's just that terrible. But conveniently, I have a number of jackets that have been donated to me over the years that are relatively warm and fluffy. Now, speaking of which, if you want to donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, there is a bank account for automatic payments on the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in, go ahead, make my news. So get on in there, or if you are capable, just get go for the PayPal, you know, a one-off donation would be lovely, or a monthly subscription of some size, ranging from $1 to $100 a month, whichever you can afford. And nobody so far has been able to afford $100 a month. The show's not that good. All right. My very special guests, Steve Wilner and Ezra Zera, welcome back. I was wondering where you would like to take the conversation now.
Wow, there's so many different ways we could go. You know, right now we're promoting this Music Myth Cosmos series, which we're also, you know, asking for donations and so forth. And maybe we can just give some more context as to the specifics of what we're doing in that documentary series.
Go feel it.
Just to kind of come from my own background, I have a website called Tone Color Alchemy, and what I do there, I have these six-week courses that I teach the fundamentals of the major arcana of the tarot. To give some background as to what that means, so you have in the standard playing deck of cards, you have what are called the pips, the ace through ten, and then you have the royal cards, the jack, queen, king. And there's a little bit of a difference between these cards and the tarot cards in that in the tarot, all of the cards you would see in a 52-card deck, those are all called the minor arcana, and there's four additional cards. So there's 56 cards in that minor arcana, but there's a whole other segment which is called the major arcana, and that's composed of 22 cards. These cards could kind of be... you know, you could compare them to the Joker in the sense that they don't have a number and they don't have a suit. They have their own archetypal value. However, there's these 22 different archetypes that are represented. So when I first discovered music theory and I went through this academic curriculum and got to the end of the music theory program, I realized that there was something missing from the way they were telling the story of music theory and where it came from and how it works and how it affects us as listeners. So I wanted to go even deeper, and that's where I found all of this archetypal mythology to be really relevant. So I discovered this 22-card major arcana system as a key to understanding music theory, and here's why. So for those of you who are watching the video, I actually brought a visual aid. This is called, this is actually a part of the Rose Cross Lamen. This is basically a flower that's represented with 22 petals with a cross at the center. Now, the way that this is described by a number of different teachings in the Western Hermetic tradition is that you have at the center the three petals at the innermost center are called the mother letters, and they're said to be the mothers of the rest of the alphabet. So these three petals give birth to the middle layer, which is composed of seven petals, And finally, the outer layer, which is composed of 12 petals. So when you add up the first, second, and third layers of 3 petals, 7 petals, and 12 petals, you arrive at 22 petals. And this is the 22-petaled rose lamen. Now, those 22 petals correspond to the 22 cards of the major arcana. However, the correspondences don't end there because they also correspond to musical notes. Now, the interesting thing is that in the Western musical system, we only have 12 notes in the subdivided octave. That means that if you were to play the musical note C, and then you were to play the higher octave of that note, there are 12 notes in between there, including C, before you reach that octave. So those 12 notes are represented actually by the outer layer, which are these 12 petals. If you then go one layer in, you see these 7 petals correspond with what's called a diatonic scale. So in music theory, the closest and most accessible analogy would be in The Sound of Music, that famous movie with Julie Andrews. She says, do, a deer, a female deer, re, a drop of golden sun. The whole scale is do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Everybody knows that. And if you just take the first 7, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, those correspond roughly to these 7 inner petals. It's not a direct correspondence in terms of the actual tones attributed to that, but archetypally it resonates with the idea of that there's, out of these 12 different fundamental notes, you have this 7-note diatonic scale that emerges out of it. At the very center of the flower, you have the 3 petals, which are Aleph, Mem, and Shin, which correspond in tarot to the Fool, Judgment, and the Hanged Man, and they correspond to the musical notes C, E, and G sharp. They form a perfect triangle or an augmented fifth of the root, the major third, and the augmented fifth in music theory, for those who know the language. And what they represent is the idea of a musical chord. One of the definitions of a musical chord is that it has to be composed of at least 3 notes. If it's just 2 notes, it's a harmony, but if it's 3 notes, it's a chord. So the subdivision of this flower into 3, 7, and 12 parts is a perfect simulacrum of the musical subdivision of the 12 chromatic notes into the 7 diatonic notes into the 3-note chord. So when I realized that there was this archetypal foundation that was shared between the tarot, between these Western hermetic magical orders that were using this tarot system as a foundation for their magical ritual practice, which, by the way, this is a derivative of the Golden Dawn, the hermetic order of the Golden Dawn out of Europe, out of Britain in the late 1800s, 1888.
As well as the OTO?
As well as the OTO, which is basically Aleister Crowley's derivative of the Golden Dawn, and also the BOTA, which is a hermetic order started by Paul Foster Case, not affiliated with Aleister Crowley, but it is affiliated with the hermetic order of the Golden Dawn. So if this might sound like a lot of information, but essentially what we're saying is that there are these orders of initiates in magical orders throughout the world, especially in the Western tradition, who have looked to this actual diagram as a foundation for enacting ritual practice. Which, what is the intention of those practices? Well, there's all sorts of different theories as to what the applications may be. Some of it is that it's mind control, manipulation of the masses, etc. But there's another teaching which actually, if you were to follow the text and the actual teachings of the groups themselves, this is considered to be the teachings of a brotherhood of light. And these different 22 petals are considered to be the 22 paths on the Kabbalistic tree of life. And the whole tree of life is seen as this diagram of the soul, as well as of the body, and the circulation of light from the very roots of our body, from our feet, all the way up to the crown, to our head. So,
like the chakra systems and so forth.
It's totally affiliated with the chakra system, which, as you know, there's essentially 8 chakras. The first 7 are from the root all the way up to the brow, and then the 8th chakra is the crown, which is sort of the expression of that 7 chakra system, circulating as an auric egg or a field of light emanating from the crown or the top point of our head back down through the feet and circulating like a torus. Yeah. So this is really about the liberation of our physical energies and our sexual energies through certain types of meditation and magical practice. And at a certain point, that's so empowering that one could then begin to have effects on the external world in such a way that if the will of the magician was unclean in some way, that they had this malevolent intent, the power that they've cultivated through these magical arts could then be projected out into the world as symbolism, which is then perceived by the sort of initiated masses as this Illuminati symbolism or this negative symbolism. Yeah. And that's only one expression of the teachings of this order, because the other teachings, the prime teachings of this group is about light and about the cultivation of light and the cultivation of personal power.
Sure.
So how we use that power is really up to each of us individually.
Has anybody ever been arrested for cultivation?
I don't think so. Unless it was cultivating, you know, plants or something.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was referring to.
Right.
In terms of musical scales, and I was just thinking about this in terms of therapy, are there any psychiatrists, psychologists, et cetera, out there who are using tonal experimentations to see if they can relieve people of, say, mental traumas or things of that nature? Any evidence of that?
Ezra and I both used these light and sound devices that sync up binaural audio with a visual device, a little visor that has different color LEDs in the visor. And it's not unlike experiences that I've had in a float tank where you're suspended in a very saline water, where you're buoyant in water, and you close your eyes and you have sort of rapid-fire visuals in your own eyes without having any music whatsoever. But these light and sound machine devices attempt to mimic certain brainwave frequencies, beta, theta, to basically get you in the mode of getting prepared for REM sleep, or to regress your psychology back to a point in your history when you were a child. And all these things can be used with tonal devices and sound coming together. In a sense, the mediums are one and the same. The visual element and the audio element merge and create this holophonic bridge across both hemispheres of your brain, to where if you're open to the experience and you're using it as a guide for meditation and a guide for inner knowing and inner searching, you could definitely use that to search within yourself and quiet your mind and find different brain states and know how to initiate them without those tools as well. They're sort of like training wheels.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I understand that music can be very healing. I just wonder to what extent, you know.
Right. Well, that's where I wanted to also chime in. There was this guy, and what was the name of the? It'll come back to me, I'm sure, at a certain point. But there was a guy who was using binaural beats. It was a guy who actually started the whole binaural beat phenomena. And I've met a couple people who actually had worked for him. The name is escaping me right now, but. The whole idea was that he was like a PhD, and he was trying to figure out how the brainwave states were associated with behavior and performance, and how somebody who had gone through traumatic experience could put on a very simple, technically non-musical sound frequency device with these binaural beats and affect their brainwaves in a way that then they could perform more efficiently. And there has been a lot of scientific evidence that's an effective method, to where, I mean, I actually personally know sound therapists who their entire technique is to basically do simple hypnotic inductions through neurolinguistic programming, and basically empower individuals to believe in themselves while hearing something that's recalibrating their hemispheric patterns in a way that they come out of the therapeutic environment with a sense of self-empowerment, with a sense of that they can go into their life and perform and succeed.
You could really wormhole into the intellectual side of how audio and sonics affect consciousness and how we could use that in subliminal ways. You could probably make a mixtape for your girlfriend using a binaural audio dummy head that suggests the name Vinny over and over again when she closes her eyes. If you want to really get crazy with it, you can. But I guess what we're talking about on another side of things is that it has a lot to do with joy. When you see dolphins creating those silver rings that they can create sonically with their own sound bursts from their whatever, their third eye, their vocal cords, they create these little silver rings in the water, and they're just playing with them. They're just having fun. So, like, sure, we as human beings, we're going to sit there and intellectualize and try to understand and format all these systems to autograph what all of these things do to our mindset. But if we look at animals in nature, they're just having fun with it. They're using pure sound as a way to just experience joy. That's it. It's not complicated at all.
See, I also wonder what's the opposite side of that spectrum, because if sometimes music can make you experience joy, then certainly it can make you experience hate. Like whenever I play any of my songs to the missus, she definitely starts to experience hate, and it's an instant. Just she hates it and want to shut it off. You know, I hate your music, Vinny. I hate your voice. It sucks. Turn it off.
Oh, no.
Wow. Well, you know what comes up for me when I hear that is that there's no particular genre that's been scientifically proven to create either joy or hate. For example, if somebody has a lot of anger pent up inside, and so they're already experiencing a lot of hatred towards whoever in their environment. When they put on music that's inherently angry or hateful, that could actually create joy just because they feel that they're mirrored by something. And so that I'm not of the belief that, oh, in order to like heal through music, we have to listen to like, you know, chirping birds and binaural beats. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that music liberates energies. So whatever we're feeling internally, music can match that. And it can do it in a way where it doesn't cost it. There's no resources. I mean, electricity or something, but whatever, it's when you take that and you compare it to pharmaceutical drugs where there's all these negative side effects and there's a cost of production, a cost of purchasing and all of that, music really eliminates all of that. And especially moving into the internet where there's this freedom of media, freedom of expression, music really seems to me like a free energy device of consciousness, if not literally at the level that Steve and I are both dreaming up where, wow, someday we could literally teleport to another part of the universe with sound. Like, is that possible? Well, maybe, you know, but in the meantime, well, what about the idea of teleporting to a previous part of our own existence? So I put on a piece of music from my childhood. All of a sudden I have the somatic knowledge of what it was like to be a 7-year-old kid experiencing that music.
And I mean, this is just an assumption, but I think human beings, because of the evolution that our brains have taken over the reptilian and the mammalian layers of the brain, music affects us different than it would affect things in direct solid nature, like plants and animals. Masamoto, the science of plants and water.
Masaru Emoto.
If you played more aggressive kind of, you know, metal or like kind of angry music towards plants, there was a study that suggested that it wouldn't grow to their fullest extent, or they would be affected at least in some way biologically from the actual negative aggressive sounds of the music.
I saw an article just the other week, a guy put out, he put some seeds down and some water over them so that they would germinate, and he puts one tray of seeds next to his smart meter that's putting out all these EMF frequencies and one on the other end of the house, and the one next to the smart meter didn't germinate at all.
Yeah. It's the same with microwaves.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be right back after the break.
Germinating seeds that you've used microwaved water to.
We're coming to break. And we'll be right back to talk about more microwaves.